Welcome to Hormone Health Podcast. We're Chloe and Georgia, your go-to naturopaths for all things hormones.
Thank you for joining us as we dive into the latest research, chat with top experts, and hear lived experiences from people just like you.
Science, stories, maybe a bit of swearing, but straight up hormone chat.
Let's get into it.
We are back. Yay. Why we need to schedule this in more?
Well, I think the thing is that at the moment it feels like quality over quantity. And so in terms of the times that we're coming in to have a chat, we've got some really good topics organized, but it's also a good chance for us to have a bit of a catch up and to do our introductory of laugh, cry, learn, repeat. And it's so funny hearing you say when I'm like, what's your laugh? You're like, oh God, I can't even think of one.
I know. Isn't that really sad? I did in the end. But no, I need to laugh more. The podcast makes me laugh. This is so fun. That's why we need to do it more often.
Anyway, let's get into it. What's your laugh of this week?
So Rumi, my middle child's favorite song at the moment is Blank Space by Taylor Swift. And at the end of that song, well, towards the end of the song, there's this, oh, damn it, I wasn't planning on singing, but now that I've used this example, I'm going to have to. There's a part of the song that goes, boys only want love if it's torture. Do you know, are you familiar with that song?
I'm not a Swiftie.
Oh, okay. You will be. Anyway, she thinks that instead of saying torture, they say Georgia. And I'm like, there is nothing closer to the truth than that, Rumi, darling girl. Boys only want love if it's Georgia. Anyway, I couldn't stop laughing and now I sing it. By the fifth time of me singing it, she goes, no, mum, it says torture.
Oh, yeah, thanks a lot, Rumi. My laugh of this week, and like thinking back on it, is it a laugh? But we went out in Sydney last Friday night for a friend's engagement party. And I just really wanted to go out after. And like, I don't know why. I was like, no, we have to go and do something out. We have to go out after. I really just want to like see what the nightlife is like. And so we had dinner and then Will and I went into Sydney City and I was like, I want to go to Caterpillar Club. We waited in line for half an hour in the rain. There was like a drunk girl stumbling into my back and all I could think about was like Olive at home in bed sleeping. And I was like, I really just want to go home. Anyway, we made it in, both had a $25 cocktail each. After that, we're like, you want to go home? And we're like, yeah.
So funny. Just not the phase.
Not the phase. Anyway, we were laughing on the way home. We're like, are we boring now? Or maybe we're just less tolerant of drunk people.
I think it's just the timing of day. Like when you and I went out with a couple of others for the day drinking, because that's the type of naturopath.
Yeah, we'd go midday, home by 6.
That was so fun. Yes, midday until 6 is fun. I can absolutely get around that. But I think, yeah, as soon as because your tolerance definitely.
If you're waking up at 5:30 in the morning, yeah, like you can't say it anyway. What's your cry of this week?
Okay, so Otto is 5 and we're having a bit of trouble lately with some anger. It's really hard to know how much is developmentally and age appropriate and how much is something else, because he's a sweet boy. There's really no other concerns other than when he gets frustrated, it's a huge outburst and it can take a bit for him to calm down and it doesn't take much for it to set him off again. And so that's what we're trying to navigate at the moment, is like, is this just a testosterone surge? Is it that you're overstimulated? Is it that it's this time of year and you've had enough of being told what to do? I don't know. Is it that you're bored and you're ready for school next year? But what he's telling me is that he said, everyone's too loud and everyone's telling me what to do. So that's the feedback I'm getting from him. And I think part of the problem is that even after a big day at preschool, he'll come home and everyone's too loud because he has two younger sisters and everyone's telling him what to do because we've got to, you know, do dinner and bath and bed and whatever else. So it's a balance of like trying to give him one-on-one time and trying to figure out like what need isn't being met while also, you know, learning that you're a part of a big family and I can, you know, we're doing our best. And anyway, if any listeners
have any advice
for a five-year-old boy who's an absolute rooster, let me know.
They're strong feelings.
And anger's really big. Like it's a really big emotion. Huge. So he's you know, we're just trying to teach him different ways to channel that energy.
And my cry is for this week is sort of similar in the sense of like that 4 p.m. till, bedtime. It's like it's just go and it can be so frantic. And it was Will's birthday on Tuesday, and I was really consciously trying to be like, no, I'm going to remain calm, because I'm normally like at him, like, did you use my towel? Have you moisturized Olive? Make sure you get her exit. Like, just at him. And I was like, no, it's his birthday. I'm going to be. And then for whatever reason, Olive's like now at the height that she'll just like walk straight into like the benches, and then she's crying, and I just lost it. And I was like, this is the first birthday that, you can recognize that you're trying to make an attempt for it to be good, but that parenting just overrides your normal state of calmness. And it was like at the end of it, it's like, oh my God, I feel guilty for just being, angry and bossy, but it is what it is. Like you said, st the stage of life.
A big part of navigating the busyness and the chaos is like, okay, what do we need? Like, what kind of infrastructure do we need here to support everyone so we can not only just cope, but try and find some calm in the chaos?
So that leads us to the learn for this week. Do you have one that comes to mind?
It's super not related. I just finished a live webinar, the Healthy Weight Workshop, and today's episode is all about weight. But I finished that live webinar with a reiteration of it is not a lack of willpower. If you are struggling with weight, if you're struggling with cravings, if you know whatever it is you're struggling with, it's not a lack of willpower. It's biology. It's your body sending signals, and it's our job to listen to what our body is saying. So that's the one thought I have today. What about you?
And I guess from that, not trying to like tack on to your own sort of quote or your learn, but like you're saying before, like it's that infrastructure. It's not a lack of willpower. It's a lack of you finding a coping mechanism, whether or not that be something that hits that dopamine receptor, like from a food perspective or like a connection or alcohol perspective. It's what we do as humans. We try to find coping mechanisms. My learn for this week is, I had one day off social media, and the world just felt less heavy. And at the moment, I'm reading The Women by Kirsten Hannah. And I tried to prioritize reading over just sort of doom scrolling, and I did feel better. And I feel like for me, it's trying to find that balance between ignorance to what's happening in the world, but then also balance.
I would love to be completely off social media.
You
If I
can't.
know if the business didn't run through, but Stephen is Will.
No, Will's like he'd
Stephen.
send a pigeon to
Oh,
communicate
really?
with
Love that. Stephen isn't, and he has no idea about stuff, and it's so good. He doesn't compare himself to other people. He just lives his good little happy life.
Yeah, it's the
Like,
ignorance
what's
component.
that like?
So repeat again, wrapping up of this week, mine would be, really, like I'm feeling like I'm trying to do it all. I'm trying to be that calm mum, that calm partner. I'm trying to less be on socials. I'm trying to be more present. I'm trying to cook, good food. I'm trying to exercise and move my body, but I can't do it all. And I think it's like this sort of dance between what sometimes takes priority in terms of what needs. And I think it's okay to not sort of have these expectations that I need to meet it all, as opposed to every week, something is naturally just going to take the priority. And my clients will know that I say this quote a lot: the one constant in life is change. So I can understand that just because things are hard doesn't mean they're going to be like this forever. Mic
Yes,
drop.
I love that. I love that. It's probably a good segue into today's episode.
Today we are talking all about, as Georgia mentioned, we are talking about healthy weight management, in regards to, majority of our listeners are really female. So today we're exploring why women's bodies respond differently to diet, exercise, and lifestyle changes as compared to men, and why those same strategies don't always work. And a quote that I'm thinking of here, in relation to this topic, is women's physiology is different, not defective.
I like that.
So, Georgie, you have just finished a Healthy Weight Workshop webinar. Give us a bit of an intro into what you spoke about.
Yes. Okay. This was a live webinar that I just hosted talking all about how to balance your weight in a really healthy, sustainable way. Because I think a lot of the time we're told, get in a calorie deficit, exercise more. That's all you need to do. It's really simple. And while that can work for some people, we often see that it doesn't work, or it works for a short period of time, but then the weight comes back, particularly around the belly or the midsection. And no matter what you do, you can't get rid of it. And so this is why I think diets don't work. There was this big study done back in 2019 that reviewed all the research papers on the effect of body weight fluctuations on health outcomes. And specifically, it was looking at the repeated loss of weight and then regaining of weight on the risk of cardiovascular disease and mortality. In all the papers reviewed, there were over 441,000 people. So this was huge. And what it showed was that fluctuations in body weight, so losing weight, gaining weight, losing weight, gaining weight, disturbs metabolism. It causes insulin resistance, high triglycerides, which is a cholesterol marker, high blood pressure, increases the risk of diabetes, and it increases belly fat. So what this research is saying is that all those months and years of yo-yo dieting that many of us have experienced not only doesn't work long term, but it actually often leaves you with higher long-term body weight and fat mass and increases the risk of chronic health conditions. Now, I shared this in the webinar not to discourage people from their journey to bettering their weight and their health. You know, the fact that people are listening to this episode and trying to learn more about what's going on in their body tells me that they're motivated and they're ready to prioritize their health. But I share it because I want people to have a different perspective on their weight loss journey rather than finding their next diet that starts on the next Monday with the hope that this will be it. I want to teach them about why they're struggling to shift weight, because once we get to the root cause of it, which is understanding the metabolic roadblocks that might be getting in the way, you can start to transform without restrictive eating and without excessive exercise. So I thought that that was a really great study to start this podcast episode off so that we can already change the perspective on what it means to achieve and maintain a healthy weight.
And what you were saying before about the dieting component in and the yo-yo sort of dieting or weight fluctuations is that we know that there's like 95% of people who potentially are losing weight in these sorts of quick approaches to diet will ultimately gain it back after time. So it's almost like you're jumping on the bandwagon trying to find this sort of next diet or next thing that's working, as opposed to looking at what's going on systemically.
Yeah, can I add to that actually? I think something
Sure
that's really
thing.
important for people to know is that we do not want rapid weight loss. Sure, it would be great to lose 10 kilos in 8 weeks so you can look great at this wedding if that's something for you. But I really encourage people to have a different approach because if you are not eating enough, you will feel hungry all the time. And this actually slows your metabolism. It also reduces your energy, affects your mood, increases your anger or anxiety, which means that you'll then make poor food choices, which means that you'll regain the weight. So the last thing we want to do is promote rapid weight loss. We want this to be a really, obviously, you want it to be effective, but you need it to be sustainable and long-lasting.
And what we know as well is that with our adipose tissue or our fat stores is that those stores also hold other things that build up in the body. And so rapid weight loss can impact that sort of lymphatic drainage or your liver sort of detoxification. Not to mention, I think you're right in terms of when you're hungry, you're just not your best self. So let's talk a little bit about hormones and how they're involved in our weight.
Yeah. So I think, particularly for the people who have tried being in a calorie deficit and they've tried exercising more and it's not working, the question is, what are your hormones doing? Because your hormones control everything. And if you think of your hormones as the traffic lights of your metabolism, if they're red, you will not move forward, no matter what you do. So I see that there's like four big hormones that affect weight. I mean, all of our hormones affect everything, but I think that there's four big drivers: cortisol, insulin, thyroid, estrogen. Should we talk about them?
Nah, that's not. Sounds boring.
Cortisol is one of your stress hormones. And it's designed to help you survive these short bursts of stress. But in today's world, with all the stress that we are exposed to, cortisol is often elevated for
Long term, like a long
too
term
long.
reason. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And the consequence of this is that you can often feel really tired but wired. You know, you're tired all day and you get that weird second wind of energy at like 9 p.m. and you can't wind down. You can get brain fog, you can feel anxious, and you can gain weight around your belly. And so what we need to do when it comes to cortisol is we need to support a healthy cortisol release. We need to regulate your cortisol. And for people that don't know whether cortisol might be impacting them, I mean, sure, we can ask questions around stress, but we can actually also test it. I know that there's an earlier podcast episode, really early on, back when we had the clinic on Hunter Street, where I did that urine cortisol test. Do you remember? I feel like we spoke about it on the podcast. And I used to carry around that big, like,
Milk
3 liters
bottle
milk bottle
of
that I had to
urine.
collect a urine over a 24-hour period. I've since changed the way that we test cortisol. I now like to test it in the saliva at 4 points throughout the day. So we can
Oh, thank gosh.
See cortisol when we wake up, at midday, in the afternoon, and in evening, so that
Lucky
we
it
live.
wasn't a stool test.
Lucky it wasn't a stool test. So we can test cortisol to see what that looks like for you. And we've done it many, many times, and it's a really interesting test to see how stressed someone's body is. But that's a big hormone that plays a role. What about insulin, Chloe? I love when you talk about insulin.
Yeah, so insulin as well is going to be influenced by our stress hormones. If we think about the main role of insulin is to communicate with glucose and tell it to either enter the cell. But what can happen is that when we're in a state of fight or flight and our body is registering that we either need to run or we need to fight, that is going to be using energy. And that energy is coming from glucose. And so glucose is then being dumped into the bloodstream and then it's either being put into the muscles, but potentially that fight or flight scenario is really just your, you've been cut off in traffic or there's something stationary that you're still getting those highs of those hormones, like those stress hormones and highs from glucose. And then what happens is that insulin is then trying to manage as an after effect all this high level of glucose and put it back into the body. And you get this whole like roller coaster of blood glucose dysregulation. And when insulin is elevated, or if that has happened time after time, your body can become resistant or resistant to those insulin messages. And therefore, you've got glucose running around like a naughty little toddler, and insulin is just that parent that's not sort of reacting the same or having the same sort of reactive process. Therefore, you've got higher glucose in your bloodstream. You're getting those highs and lows. So, we need to think about insulin as a really crucial hormone involved in our weight management.
Yeah, and promoting fat storage. And so, aside from cortisol and insulin, we've got the thyroid. And the thyroid is a butterfly-shaped gland that sits right at the base of your neck. And think of your thyroid hormones as the conductors of the metabolic orchestra. They influence how fast or how slow your body does everything from burning calories to growing hair and regulating your menstrual cycle.
Whether
And
you
the
get constipated, whether you have loose bowel movements. And the way I sort of think about, sorry to cut you off, but the way I think about the thyroid as well is that it's dictating whether or not it needs to slow the body down or whether it needs to speed it up for whatever reason. And that can be influenced as well from like viral infection or postpartum. But like you mentioned, it's very influential in how our body uses energy.
Yeah. And so think if your thyroid is sluggish or underactive or hypothyroidism, you can feel really tired, you can feel really foggy, constipated, puffy. And no matter what you do, the weight won't shift. Versus when your thyroid is really fast or overactive or hyperthyroid, everything's fast. You're sweaty, you have insomnia, you have anxious, you have diarrhea, you have rapid weight loss. So the thyroid is really key in investigating and supporting on when we're trying to achieve a healthy weight.
And not to sort of get too confusing for our listeners, but these hormones that we have mentioned are all basically signaled from the same area in the brain. Our thyroid stimulating hormone, our reproductive hormones are all sort of signaled from a gland called the pituitary gland. And that's going to, again, be largely dictated by our nervous system or how our brain is registering stress. And this is a conversation that I've had with my clients where, especially from a female perspective, it feels like we have to, we can be sometimes less resilient to stress, which it feels like a big gender disparity or, how, like, of course we try to talk to men about managing their nervous system. But yeah, it's one of those things that we're just not designed to take it all on and, be looking after three kids on our own or be doing all of this and trying to be reaching all these milestones, plus, the energy requirements of having a menstrual cycle, bleeding, all those sorts of things. Yeah, girl. Tell them.
So true. Hormones affect more than what we think. And then there's estrogen, and I feel like people know more about estrogen now. So they often think like, oh, I've probably got estrogen dominance is a term we hear thrown around all the time, which I'm not sure I like because I think it's more than just estrogen. It's like, is there too much estrogen because you're not being protected by progesterone? What's the problem? But estrogen, when you make enough estrogen, you feel good. You feel happy. You feel strong. Your bones are happy. Your skin looks
We love
gorgeous.
estrogen.
Yeah, your mood is stable. But if you make too much, particularly in relation to progesterone, it can lead to hormonal problems like PMS. You're irritable. You're angry. You've got heavy periods, painful periods. You've got breast tenderness. You've got premenstrual headaches or migraines. And you've got weight gain, particularly around the belly, because estrogen's stored in fat cells. And so we need to make sure, and we can test estrogen at different points in the cycle to see what's going on, but we need to make sure that we've got enough estrogen to make us feel good, but not too much that it's contributing to weight.
And what we find with estrogen as well is that the higher it is, or this unopposed estrogen, the bigger it has to drop. And it's that drop that can really sort of give you all those sort of symptoms as well. But interesting point with estrogen, like you were saying, estrogen is protective against fat loss in certain areas. It has a lot of these sort of advantages, but you just need the right amount. Like we know in menopause, when you stop having a period and you have low estrogen, you can get certain fat gain. It's a really sort of delicate balance with what your estrogen is doing. But I just want to add on to that as well. Estrogen, too much estrogen can increase a hormone called aldosterone. And aldosterone is what we call a mineral corticoid. And it's largely sort of in the kidneys, and it's going to have a big involvement in our sodium or and water retention. And so, especially in that premenstrual phase, if you have higher amounts of estrogen, a big sort of influence of aldosterone, you could be noticing several kilos extra just of fluid retention, which is really demotivating when you are on, say, a weight loss journey.
I know it's crazy. I think people don't know how much weight can fluctuate in response to hormones.
Yeah, it's huge. So we're considering as well, like, especially if you're somebody who's weighing yourself, being considerate about how, if you're comparing your premenstrual weight to your post-period weight, because yeah, you're dealing with a couple hundred grams, or it could be, a few kilos just purely from a estrogen aldosterone perspective.
So we've spoken a bit about hormones and what the big players are. Let's talk about what people can do about it, because I think this is where people fall off and they're like, you know what? It's not working for me. This is just how it's going to be. I may as well just go and binge eat because nothing works.
Okay, so we know here in Australia, and I guess across the world, that the prevalence of body dissatisfaction is huge. But in terms of from a research perspective, there was a study conducted in 2022, which found that more than half of Australian women experience dissatisfaction with their bodies. For instance, there was even a study that the Butterfly Foundation did that found 70% of Australian women reported that their appearance was very important to them, and many wished that they could change their looks, how they looked. And so that's huge. Like, and I think
Huge.
we're a very visual culture in this day and age. Like we were mentioning before, how much we use social media, and there's that comparison factor. I think, some teenagers or like late teens, early 20s can be on social media for several hours during a day. And so, yeah, I think when we're considering that at least half of the population has a dissatisfaction in how they're looking, it's a very vulnerable place to be from a weight loss perspective. And so, like you were coming back to saying, it really needs to be sustainable, long-term, holistic approach to what their weight is doing, especially from a female anatomy perspective.
And I think we could move away from I want to lose X amount of kilos to I want to feel better. I want my clothes to fit better. I want to have more energy. I want to, have a stable mood throughout the day. Like maybe if we move away from the number on the scales to more how do we feel and, how do we feel in our bodies, that would be a better marker of success. I also wanted to just mention, and I talk about this in my Feel Good program, which is our online self-paced 4-week program designed to help you reset your energy, transform your body, and make it last. It also has like a 70 plus page meal plan. But I talk about this in the program where maybe we ditch the scales altogether and maybe instead of weighing ourselves all the time and getting really discouraged if it goes up or it doesn't shift as much as we want, which like we now know could be hormonal, could be fluid retention,
Could be dodgy scales.
could be, I do often say it's probably the scales. Maybe we do a measurement. And do a waist measurement and remember that. And this is remember in that podcast episode with Dr. Soji Swaj, where every 1 centimeter lost around the waist equates to 1.4 kilograms of fat loss. Like, what a way better marker to track than simply a number on scales. And also, the thing about scales is if you have started incorporating more strength training and you're gaining muscle, muscle weighs more than fat. So maybe you're in much more metabolic shape than you think you are, but because the scales aren't budging in the way that you like them to, you're getting demotivated and disappointed.
So a few points in regards to, again, why I feel like I don't like using scales for my clients is that your weight naturally fluctuates. Yes, in regards to your menstrual cycle, but it can really depend on the food that you ate the day prior. So we know that 1 gram of carbohydrates is attached to 4 grams of fluid. So if you're having a heavy sort of carbohydrate meal the day before, naturally you're going to store more water and more glycogen in your body. Also, do you have a big poo sitting in your intestines? And I know that's not a very nice way to say it, but it's like we really need to think about it in the sense of what can we not see that is having an influence on our weight. And so, if you are somebody that wants to weigh themselves on the scales, I would say do it once a week and then create a mean average. Calculate all those numbers together. Divide it by how many numbers there are, and then find that average of what it is, at the end of the month.
Yeah, that's a really great way to do it because think healthy, sustainable weight loss is more like half a kilo a week, but then that depends on where you are in your cycle, what your hormones are doing, everything you've been eating. So I think, yeah, getting the average is really, that's a really great way to do it. So maybe let's talk about some of the things that people can do to get lasting change in a nice, healthy, sustainable way. In the healthy weight workshop that I ran earlier, I spoke about five foundations. So maybe this is something that we can share here. Balancing blood sugar levels, supporting your stress resilience, optimizing your sleep, healing your gut, and moving smarter, not harder. So when I talk about blood sugar levels, I'm really talking about building a plate that is going to support your metabolic health, having enough protein, having enough fiber, having enough healthy fats. And avoiding naked carbs. And when I talk about naked carbs,
From my perspective, a naked carb would be, some crackers without a side of, say, hummus, or, and I know in theory it sounds like you're adding more calories, but essentially what you're doing by adding toppings or cloves to your carbs is that you're stabilizing those blood sugar levels, as opposed to, for example, you have a bowl of rice, delicious, but it's just going to be immediate carbohydrate, not locked down with any fibers or fat. Therefore, your blood sugar levels spike and then they drop, rendering you hungrier, which means that you want to eat another snack, as opposed to you're eating something that's laden with fats and fiber. That's going to create for a slower digestion. Therefore, you have a more sustained energy release and you're not as hungry.
Yes, it's basically everything I said in the workshop. So that's great. You weren't even there. So balancing blood sugar. I also, in my feel good program, I talk about this all the time. And for anyone that's listening, that's like, okay, I need to access a feel good program. We have a code that you can use called podcast in capitals, and you can get 10% off the feel good program, but you can start accessing that right now in the show notes. We'll put the link. Aside from balancing blood sugar levels, we also need to support your stress resilience. Now, I spoke about stress not from the standpoint of you need to reduce your stress. Like obviously that's great. Quit your job if you need to, or get out of a relationship if that's toxic, or
I'm
maybe
leaving
stop.
Will and I'm quitting
Yeah,
Hormone Health
I'm done.
Studios.
I'm done. But maybe we need to get more resilient. This is something that I learned at the brain symposium I went to a few weeks ago. One of the speakers there, I can't quite remember who it was saying, maybe what we need to do is train ourselves to find calm or to relax in chaos. And I really liked that because I think, particularly as a mom of three kids who are 5, 3, and 1, someone, if not all of them, are screaming and crying all the time. And I get really overwhelmed really easily. And I'm trying to teach myself to find calm in the chaos. So maybe we need to really, yeah, get on top of, what's causing stress, but also train ourselves to become more resilient to stress.
I like that because stress isn't going anywhere. And so it's almost like our approach to it as a key component to the holistic sort of underpinning of weight. And it's hard in the moment, and everyone sort of has those feelings where they're just like, I really didn't handle that situation very well. But I think when we're sort of thinking about stress, it's one of those words that can mean different things for different people. Stress can be under eating and overtraining. It can be taking on too much or not sort of, or trying to sort of do it all. It can be, not sort of managing your anxiety, or if you have like a medical like diagnosis, not getting sufficient support for that. Stress, I guess, when you sort of think about stress, it's like, what are three of those top things that give you, or if you were to triage your top three influences of stress, what would they be? And then think about or workshop over ways that you can sort of look at trying to manage that.
Yeah, I agree. And then I think, look, one big way to manage stress, and this leads you into the next foundation, is to optimize sleep.
I thought you were going to say a nice glass of Pinot.
I'm more of a
Shiraz gal.
no, I feel like it's a bit too harsh for me. I do love a Merlot. A Merlot. I love a Merlot. Sleep is one of the best ways you can manage your stress. And I think in this day and age, we all prioritize whatever task we need to get through in the day, and then we just leave sleep to whatever hours is left in the day. But if we can encourage you to do something, it's to flip that and prioritize sleep.
The thing when I'm talking to clients, and it's especially our mums in that sort of postpartum stage, or even our peri or menopausal clients who are trying to get the sleep, but their hormones are working against them. I sort of talk about the fact that sleep can too much, too little can definitely influence our weight. And there was a study involving nearly 70,000 women, and they found that those who slept 5 hours or less per night were around 32% more likely to experience significant weight gain over the next sort of 15 plus years. So we, that's not, shouldn't be a fear-mongering thing. It should be a reminder that you can be doing everything quote unquote right, but if your sleep is not supported, then that is definitely going to be an influential factor.
I can add to that. There was this other study that was done years and years ago that looked at the effects of a single night of sleep deprivation. And it showed that those who slept, well, yeah, less than 5 hours, this particular study was 4.5 hours, had 22% higher levels of the hunger hormone ghrelin compared to those who slept 7 hours. So what this really shows is that sleep really is the fat burning switch that we need to take seriously. And I think,
I like that.
Reading stuff like this is interesting because you're like, it makes so much sense as a mum who gets no sleep. And it's like, no wonder I'm looking for bloody sugar or something or wine to get me through the day, because I'm tired and then I get overstimulated and then I'm just on a hormonal level. I've got more hunger hormones circulating because I'm depleted.
Interestingly, the popularized medication at the moment, the GLP-1 receptor antagonist medications, or things like Ozempic or Saxenda, they work on reducing ghrelin, which is our hormone that stimulates hunger. So we have at our own disposal the ability to influence our ghrelin hormone just through sleep.
Underrated. Absolutely underrated.
Can someone tell our kids that?
Yes, I know, honestly. If someone has the answer, you know what? I did see circulating on, I think it was TikTok, but if you give your kids a teaspoon of butter and some milk before bed, that they'll sleep better.
Well, there you go.
Anyway, nice healthy fats.
Was this you doom scrolling at like 10 p.m. at night?
Yeah.
How can I sleep better?
Yeah, exactly. Start by not blocking your melatonin secretion with screens. Anyway, the next foundation, maybe talking about fats is a good segue. The next foundation is about healing your gut. There is a direct relationship between your gut microbiome and your metabolism. And we know that more diversity in the good bugs in your gut results in better blood sugar levels, reduced cravings, and weight control, because we know that whatever you're feeding your gut microbiome, whatever food your gut is used to, it craves. So if you're having a lot of sugar, a lot of processed foods, and you stop it and you take it away, you're going to have some cravings in that first 1 to 4 weeks because your gut is craving what it's used to. So something to know, particularly if you start to change the way you're eating, swapping these processed foods for more whole, you know, and by processed foods, I mean like muesli bars and rice cakes and biscuits and cookies and chips and crackers and lollies and protein bars, like the with ultra ingredients list.
Ultra processed foods.
If you start swapping those ultra processed foods that harm your gut microbiome to more whole foods like nuts and seeds and berries and veggie sticks with hummus and boiled eggs with tomatoes or whatever your snacks then look like, it'll take a bit for your gut microbiome to adjust, but ultimately you'll notice a big shift. You'll notice, yes, your metabolism improves, your weight improves, but the cravings go.
This is the hard thing, is that we as a society are up against chemically structured foods to make us want to eat them, to make us want to eat a lot of them, and to make them so desirable that they, you know, hit all those dopamine receptors in our brain and we want to have them again. They don't do anything for satiety, because if they, you know, made us full, then we're not going to eat more of them. So it's really hard, because these foods are chemically designed and structured to be moreish.
Yeah.
So when we do gut testing on our clients, there is a specific mucus degrading bacterium called Archimenza. Archimenza is not, it's not in everybody's gut, but what they have found is that certain people who have higher level of these Archimenza bacteria is shown to be more beneficial for metabolic health, and is associated with like leaner individuals than compared with people who are in the obese category. And so what we know with Archimenza is that it can improve gut barrier function, enhance insulin sensitivity, and regulate fat storage. So when we're talking about the health of your gut, there is ways that you can support certain bacteria to influence your weight and your ability to use that sort of energy and fat storage.
Gut testing is really cool. I really encourage it if it's within a budget and people are interested in doing a stool test, because it just tells you so much about what's going on. You see the whole diversity in your gut, you see what like the lining's like, if there's markers for what is colloquially termed leaky gut, you can obviously see if there's any parasites or anything. But particularly if you're someone that is constantly bloated, you've got all of these gut problems going on, and you're trying to shift weight, really, really useful information. So we do that all the time.
Point that you were talking about in your webinar was working smarter, not harder. And if I can talk on this point for a moment, just in regards to exercise. Now, what we typically see in clinic is people coming to us saying that they're doing high intensity exercise or they're HIIT workouts, maybe like CrossFit type style, and they're just not having any change in their body composition. For certain people, coming back to point two, when you're saying support stress resilience, these types of exercise for certain people can exacerbate their cortisol levels. Not saying that it should be something to fear and that everybody needs to, do more relaxing type exercise. It's really your individual balance. For example, if you're doing, at home, your home environment is a stressful situation where it increases your cortisol adrenaline levels, and then you go to a gym that's blasting loud music and you're doing high intensity HIIT training, and then you're going to a high intensity job that elevates, you're not getting that balance. So what I typically recommend for my clients who are non-responsive to that type of exercise is to really focus on zone two training, which is really going to be the best for fat loss because, and zone two training, again, it's something a bit more popularized at the moment on socials, but essentially, zone two training is when you're at a 60 to 70% of your max heart rate. And you can calculate that out depending on what your max heart rate is, but then sustaining that level of intensity for around 30 to 90 minutes and doing at least 150 minutes per week is what the World Health Organization or the Australian health recommendations are for general exercise. But really, if you're doing that, it's like almost if we're thinking about we're creating a fire and you want to keep that fire burning or smoldering for a bit, you're generating energy, therefore you're using those fat storages. And that can be as simple as walking on an incline, elevating your heart rate, doing a brisk walk or a jog or anything like that. And it doesn't have to be that sort of entire intensity, which HIIT training is probably like a zone 5-6.
Yeah, the other thing I would add to that is if you are someone that has a menstrual cycle, then tuning in to see what hormones are where in that phase of your cycle and then training appropriately alongside that. So it was just a real quick hash on the cycle. The first half of your cycle is the follicular phase where really estrogen takes a lead. Estrogen makes you feel really good, really happy, really motivated. That's when you can do your HIIT training. You can go for longer runs. You'll feel like you can hit your PBs and lift heavier and recover better. Whereas once ovulation happens, which is the big event of the cycle, progesterone then takes the lead. And progesterone naturally is demotivating. You'll feel like you're hungrier. You'll feel more tired. You'll feel like you can't recover or hit your PBs. And that is normal. That's hormones talking. So
As
that's
the name
when.
suggests, progestation. Your body potentially thinks that it could be pregnant. Therefore, you've got all of those nice calming hormones at play post-ovulation.
So that's where you can pull back on the HIIT training and do more gentle stuff, walking, stretching, yoga, Pilates, though I would say yoga and Pilates are hard, but that kind of lesser intense training is really useful, and you'll just feel better for it rather than pushing yourself and pushing yourself and then feeling exhausted. Work with your hormones instead of against them.
Lifting for some people who do weights, lifting heavier but lower reps during that time, maybe they might find is better. But I really think walking is so underrated. I really love the element of walking, being in green space or walking with your partner or your family or just even alone. Walking is one of those things that is just, yeah, I think we need to do more as a society. We're more sort of sedentary. And what they have found is that doing a half hour of just, of high intensity exercise a day is not going to offset a sedentary lifestyle.
Absolutely. And every single PT weight loss expert will harp on about
Getting your
weight.
steps in.
Yeah, we'll harp on about walking being the best exercise.
And not to bring it back from a calorie perspective and from a weight perspective, but for example, if you are walking 5,000 steps per day, on average, that is a that requires the body to use at least 200 to 250 calories. That, alongside sleep, stress management, can be enough to have a sustainable weight loss of, a quarter of a kilo a week if you're doing everything else in terms of all you need to sort of increase is potentially your walking. So not to let that be confusing, but it's really individual depending on what your body needs, what you're already doing, and trying to make sure you're doing all those things in combination as opposed to just focusing on one.
And I mean, this is really why we created the Feel Good program, a place that has a whole bunch of short, easily digestible videos on all of the metabolic roadblocks that get in the way. So, how the Feel Good program works is when you join the program, you are taught to do a couple of quick calculations to understand what your body needs in terms of nutrition. And then there's a whole 70 plus page meal plan ready to support you. It's super easy. It's meant to be easy. And then there's a whole bunch of videos explaining and helping you uncover what metabolic roadblocks are getting in the way for you. Is it stress? Is it sleep? Is it insulin resistance? Is it thyroid? Do you have PCOS or endo? Are you in perimenopause? Are you postpartum? What is it that's getting in the way? Is it inflammation, nutrient insufficiencies? Do you have mitochondrial dysfunction? It helps you uncover exactly what is stopping you from achieving your goal weight with strategies to help you overcome those. So that's a Feel Good program. We'll drop the link below in the session notes. Session notes.
Look at you.
What's it called?
Yeah, session notes, they are.
Talk notes. Well, that's what we call our notes for
In the
our clients.
show notes.
Show notes in the show notes, and use the code podcast for a special 10% discount. But you can get started in that program right now.
So, Georgia, I remember when you started doing the Feel Good program, and you were following it, and I was asking you maybe on like week three, I was like, how are you feeling? And you're like, good. I'm like, that's the whole point. Your Feel Good program. Hit the nail on the head.
I named it appropriately, I think, because the first thing you start to feel is good. And then, because weight is always just like a nice sign. Obviously, if you want to shift weight, you want to shift weight. But arguably, what's better is that you just feel good. You've got more motivation, you've got more energy, you've got more, more energy to play with your kids or do it, whatever it is that you want to do. You want to just feel good.
Naturally,
And
that promotes more motivation and then the cycle.
the cycle continues.
So we hope that you enjoyed this week's episode. Hopefully, we won't leave you as long in between episodes, but next week we're actually chatting to Renee Grandi, who is a women's health specialist all about endobrain. So I'm super interested to hear what she has to say about that and the involvement of the brain as a complex inflammatory condition and how that has an influence all on the body. So stay tuned.
Yeah, that one's going to be great.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode.
If you liked it, leave us a review and follow us on socials. We'd love to hear from you.